Vegas lights shine bright, bad boys sitting pretty. Michael, Steve, Rob running things in Sin City. Podcast blazing truth, rhyming hard and witty. Three kings on the mic, Vegas life gets gritty. Matt Michaels dropping bombs, quick wit, no filter. Sin City's own, blending gold with the silver. Steve taking notes, every word's a thriller. Rob's on the tracks, beats cold like a chiller. Bad boys a podcast, raw truth they broadcast. Speaking facts so fast, haters coming dead last. Las Vegas legends, three amigos top class. Mic in hand, setting fire, never outclass.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here with Rob Bossolari and Sin City Steve on the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. Boys, it's been one heck of a long week and a lot going on in pro wrestling right now. And we can start right away with NXT's Vengeance Day that happened this past weekend. And man, some good stuff going on. You know, Faxium, they retained and then got beat up by four guys that we had no idea who they are. Santino Morello showed up backstage to talk to Ava, and looks like some stuff is in the works between TNA and NXT. You know, the craziness of these four mystery people who showed up also and laid out Obafemi. Garrison Waller got one hell of a ride through a table as well in that match. Good stuff there. A strap match that Trick Williams actually lost to Eddie Thorpe, which was surprising. Ethan Page got his nose knocked open, but managed to defeat Javon Evans. We kicked off the night with a new North American champion for the women in Stephanie, and man, we finished the night with a retaining Julia in a fatal four-way. And man, afterwards, Julia and Stephanie in the ring together with both belts, and here comes Jordynne Grace. A lot of stuff going on with NXT.
Is she still going to be Jordynne Grace? She's shopping new names, I hear.
With the Titantron saying Jordynne Grace, I would assume that.
I know they were posting a joke.
Now Ricky Starks shopping a new name, that's not out of the question though.
Because he came out and everyone was chanting his name, so they would be stupid
Run Jordynne Grace. Jordynne Grace. All plans are for her to use the name and the IP that she has established. But yeah, I think that that last image of those three women standing there, what they're going to focus on with NXT's women's division going forward for the foreseeable future, for sure.
Scissor party.
Hey, there you go.
You know, that's a whole different, that's a whole different show, man. The scissor party.
and you gotta love Team New Retribution coming out too.
Well, yeah. We'll see what that is.
Yeah, I don't know. Scissor Party would be truly a premium live event.
Right. Absolutely. How crazy is that? Some crazy stuff going on. John here says, shout out to both women's matches at NXT Vengeance. Stephanie Vaquer getting gold 4 months after her NXT debut with Jordynne Grace's appearance. How can you not say NXT has the best women's division? I know that probably somewhere on another station in another company, they're claiming to have the best women's division on the planet. So I'm sure
it's the very best. It's quite honestly the very best.
If you don't feel like as if you have the best of something, then you've already lost. I mean, you have to feel as if you have the best product out there. And if not, then why are you doing what you're doing?
I think this is going to come to a conversation of what we saw at Grand Slam with Mercedes Moné versus Harley Cameron as to what an individually good match would look like, but not as a division.
Right.
Right. And we'll get to that in a second, Rob.
Right. Right.
You know, look, Rob, you don't have a hat on.
Wait, hold on, hold on. I can fix it.
Oh boy. Yeah, it's make America grab again. All right,
there you go. Well,
there you go. So yeah, I mean, there was a lot that went on in Vengeance Day. Oba Febi retains, but now we have a new faction wreaking havoc for whatever reason.
Aces and bait.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what it's so retribution-esque that let's hope it's not the same type of thing. But it seems like it's a number of these young athletes who were at the training center. We'll see where they go from there. And look, Ricky Starks did debut. Will Ricky Starks be a star is the big question.
Absolutely.
Jim Ross said, he's a high motor guy. I don't know if he'll be the next Shawn Michaels at his size, but he has a unique future. He's got a big personality, so hopefully he'll do well and lives his dream. It seems like the dream for a lot of talents is to make it to WWE and call it a day. That's not where it ends. That's where it begins. I saw the episode of NXT last night. Surprised to see Ricky Starks. Don't know how he's going to do. He's got a high opinion of himself, and he's got a lot of abilities. There's no doubt about that. So we'll see how it works out for him. It's never easy to get over, and hopefully he can get over and stay over as a top star. Remains to be seen, so we'll see how it goes. You know, and that's a great question. That's coming from JR. I guess that begs to differ then the question of, you know, how does that come about where you have JR saying something like that and he was just in the company that you represent? So is there a disconnect there? Like, if you see that you think that this guy can be a star, how come you didn't make him a star?
Does JR have the pull you think he does? Back in Attitude Era, yeah, JR was making those decisions and was running that locker room. I don't think that's the case now. They look to him as this elder statesman of wrestling as a whole, and AEW is probably just glad to have his voice on a few PLEs. I think it's a touch of senility where you should probably not be putting over somebody who's jumped ship, but it's also the most honest answer because the guy's so out of it. He's just going to speak honestly. So that's a touch of respect. And I would still hold the guy's opinion of a wrestler in high regard. Although strategically, he should be shutting his mouth. But.
Well, he can't. You know, it's his podcast. So, you know, this is what he really makes his money doing is the podcast. But
it's like listening to Mark Henry talk about AEW. He's not with the company anymore, but he's got to put them over if he feels it, you know, reasonable to do so.
Right. I guess the question is, again, it's more so even if JR doesn't have the position of, you know, that's the thing. The thing is, though, is that if you have that guy in your company and he sees the potential in this guy, then why is Tony not listening?
I don't think Tony's listening to anybody at this point, man.
Why is seriously Tony in WWE?
Think about it, dude. Because if you look at it, if you look at the amount of wrestling knowledge that is in that company, okay, let's remove Tony Khan out of the equation temporarily. He has to not be listening to anybody or listening to any feedback he's been given, because if you look at the quality of the shows, things have been stagnant for a while. And the only way that things get stagnant is if things don't change. And if things don't change, a lot of times that's because people don't listen to outside voices and they just railroad their thoughts through from beginning to end.
Sure. Sure. And that was something that Booker T kind of talked about this week. you know, how the guys put stuff out there. And then there's also no follow through to the ideas. So not only is he not listening to feedback or this and that, he's listening to the guys and what they want to do, but he has no one in creative to pull off the ideas thoroughly. So it is kind of a hodgepodge where some things come off good and some things don't.
But you know what? It's like anything. I have a type of a job where I visit lots of different other retailers, and every manager, even though it's under one brand, every store is vastly different. So definitely. Ricky Starks gets to a point, they put him with Big Bill. I didn't see much chemistry there. Me personally, he was with Taz. I liked it for a little bit, but I don't think he was a good fit for that brand. I mean, forget about Ricky Starks. Think about a guy named Ty Dillinger. What happens to him? And he becomes a chairman, Sean Spears. He clocks Cody in the skull with a chair. What was which a shoot could have been the biggest explosion of a career of a guy ever. And nothing comes of it. They ice him. Then they bring him back and they put a leather glove on his hand for some asinine reason. They hook him up with Tully Blanchard. They did everything to put this guy back over. But once you were iced after the biggest entryway you could have ever made for yourself, there was no coming back. Now he's on NXT and he looks good, I guess.
He's got a major angle going on with Tony D'Angelo right now.
Right.
But they're making something out of Sean Spears. I never fucking thought in my life, once again, another motherfucker that I fucking go, oh my God, I'm going, Jesus Christ, they're fucking doing something. And I'm going, ugh.
But now here's the thing. He was on SmackDown. So this is his road back, where for some of these guys, like, what's his name? You know, All Ethan Ego Page. This is his way up. This son of a bitch has to climb his way back from here, from the main brand to the indies, back to the main brand. It just, AEW didn't work out for everybody. You know, call me when MJF shows up at the main roster of WWE and they're zapping off his All In tattoo. Then I'll take a dump. Cody always wanted the big belt. He wanted to chase what his dad never had. But they should have taken better heed of him. And somebody should have whispered in his ear, hey, this idea that you're going to screw yourself out of ever being able to hold the belt, stop that. You deserve to be at the highest rank in this company. Don't feel like you're stealing from yourself. Somebody should have had that conversation with him that he would never think to ever want to leave.
Well, but
it happened.
At this point.
It's past tense.
Look where he is.
Right, exactly. And it worked for him.
And speaking of looking where he is, this just broke per PW Insider. Road Dogg Brian James has been named the new co-lead writer for SmackDown. And AJ Styles responded by saying, before judging this guy from his past performance as the head writer, just know that there was a man who picked it apart to the point that it was no longer his ideas anymore, with a thinking emoji. So, it looks like AJ Styles is behind the fact that Road Dogg is going to get creative freedom, and that could be a huge benefit for SmackDown.
I absolutely agreed. I mean, a lot of people shit-canned his previous run when he was overseeing creative, and I was one of them. I thought that it was absolutely terrible booking, terrible storyline.
What was the timeline when by which he was the head of creative?
Was that 4 years ago?
Oh, yeah. You got to think Vince has been gone like 3 years. So
yeah. Yeah. It was basically when Vince got, you know, when everything went down with Vince. That was right around that same time when Road Dogg was running creative.
Yes, you have that son of a bitch in a leather jock strap and a leather helmet, goddammit.
Yeah.
Don't give a shit what he did in NXT.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian is probably one of the most creative guys.
Yeah.
Just like his brother Brad was one of the best in-ring wrestlers who never became anything other than a good, solid wrestler because he didn't have the charisma like Road Dogg. And it's just amazing the trajectory that Road Dogg has had. And it should be interesting to see what he does as a head writer. And speaking of Hall of Famers, is Demolition Hall of Fame bound?
God, we can hope man. So.
The news broke that wrestling fans have been waiting for a very long time. Demolition has signed WWE Legends contract. Hello, new figures, merch, and maybe, just maybe, a WWE Hall of Fame induction. Fingers crossed, they deserve it. That Michelle McCool has been announced as getting into the Hall of Fame. And Triple H, of course, is the headliner. We have absolute time, we still have like 64 days or 63 days, whatever it is, until WrestleMania. So what do we think? Are they going in this year?
It's never been a better time, man. That was always one of the most glaring oversights, was Demolition being snubbed from the Hall of Fame. So what a better, wrong to right for Triple H than this. By God, can we hear that amazing theme song at least a few more times, please?
But did you see how they broke the news to Michelle McCool? That was awesome.
That was dope.
Yeah.
Triple H just gets on the screen there and is like, hey, by the way, you're going to get the Legends.
Okay. Well, if he broke it like that, then that's pathetic.
Jesus. What
the hell, dude? All right.
You have to sell you with your pack a day.
So, all right. So we touched on little things going on here in WWE. Now let's talk about AEW Grand Slam Australia, the exciting pay-per-view event that became a collision event that was so well thought out that news out of Grand Slam, allegedly Tony didn't factor in shipping times. So the ring tonight is from a local indie and the apron skirt incorrectly sized for the smaller 16 by 16 ring. And here's a picture of the steps that were used to get into the ring. Wow. Pay-per-view quality. Never a dull moment in AEW. But we did have the moment of timeless Toni Storm winning the AEW Women's Championship in her home country. Wow. So can I just say, if I had to pay money for that as a pay-per-view, I would have been pissed. Pre-show? All right.
All right.
It was in the middle.
If we're going according to the prices that were there, then yeah, it should have been a pay-per-view level show. That was the expectation. Initially, it was supposed to be a stadium show. And that was what it was described as. So obviously you have people that go and attempt to pick up tickets on launch day and pay a special premium, thinking right. that they're going to go to a stadium show in Australia, and then it becomes a glorified collision. The fans did not hold back when Tony went out to kind of hype up the crowd before the show, as he was booed vociferously, man. It was the clips are out there online. It got loud and not in the right way. So I will say, though, the matches that were put on the show, top to bottom, it was a very solid show. It was a Clash of the Champions level type of a show. Or I heard Meltzer, I know, whatever, say whatever you will, but Meltzer actually made a great point with this. It was what Battle of the Belts should have been. Obviously they've had these, these marquee events, and they've been glorified editions of Collision. And they've labeled them as Battle of the Belts. We've all shit canned them because all of the outcomes were telegraphed. You could see exactly what was going to happen. But with this, it felt like a just under a pay-per-view level type of a build. You had builds for, you know, several weeks to these matches leading in. I was impressed with what they did on the show, to be honest.
Agreed.
It wasn't horrible at all in terms of the match levels, except for certain things. Like, once again, the Death Riders, it fucking kills the show. These guys, I don't get it.
That's the whole joke of it is they know they're obnoxious. The joke is it's an obnoxious group of people that roll one or two opponents in the ring who always come out the same way. We're going to beat you up so bad. We're going to expose you. We're going to get the belt. Then five people show out and kick the shit out of them. And you go, well, duh, this is going to happen every time. So why do you keep giving us the same type of match?
Yeah.
You know?
And the thing is, obviously, having Cope get choked out, it deflated the crowd. But you know, you had other things on the show, like you mentioned Tony winning the women's championship. Say whatever you will about Mercedes, but Mercedes and Harley Cameron, that was the best match I've ever seen out of Harley Cameron, and she couldn't do it alone. Mercedes made her look like $1 million.
By the way,
and I've said that she's been on a run as of late as far as delivering good match quality. That was just another example of it.
She is the Chelsea Green of AEW. Is that fair?
Harley?
Yeah, she's got Harley Cameron. She went from the, you know what the funny thing was watching that match? She tries to do some like Jericho move where she slides through the upper ropes and grabs her and she botches it. And then that was the only mistake. As the match is going on, you're watching Harley Cameron adapt and learn and grow. The tie up Mercedes after the botch moves, the hit her in the face, you know, all of the things that were going on. She just adapts and evolves as a wrestler through the course of a match. And this is an example. You don't want her winning. You want her chasing because that's where the entertainment is. And having her lose also shows Mercedes Moné is not a shitty wrestler. She's very goddamn good in the ring, you know? She's not a joke in the ring. She didn't get those belts by accident. You know what? You've got to figure, all right, she's a heat magnet. She's wrestling well. She used that opportunity to spawn off another fucking feud with a Japanese star. This is a person who understands the business and understands what her role is in Mercedes Moné. And Harley Cameron. Harley Cameron should just keep, you know, building up from here. Get her in the ring as much as possible. Give her guitar to her and give her a puppet.
Yeah.
Well, she bitch slapped her with a puppet. That was
I'm surprised that some people that were overly critical of the show didn't get all up in arms that she didn't get flagged for, you know, a disqualification when she hit her with the puppet. Like it you know, say what you will about, you know, the ring steps and the ring dimensions and stuff like that. I get it. It's funny because, you know, lol, AEW. But at the end of the day, you know, you just know that this shit's not going to go off without a hitch.
That Dumas was for yours truly. Welcome, Kevin. Welcome, Kevin.
I think one of the things they fucked up on, though, is why they opened with the match. They opened with the fucking Death Riders or something like that. Put those guys on later.
I see why they did it, though. It got the crowd hot right away.
Right. And then you kill the crowd with the Death Riders. Just freaking, you know, what I'm saying is that quality of, so arguably those two tagging are your two top stars. Two of your top male stars.
Agreed.
And you put them on as the curtain jerker, which, you know, you had things to choose from. You could have put Monet's match first.
Yeah, you could have done that.
You know, because you had the women closing. So I just thought it was like you put on a burner and then these are the guys you're trying to fucking make your marquee stars. So
an old TV term called hammocking, because you put a top match, a low match, a high match. And the thing is, did you blow your load too soon? Maybe.
Never want to blow your load too soon.
Yeah. And afterwards,
wait, they now wait. Are you banana hammocking when you're blowing your load?
Or? Yeah. They cut a promo. The only thing that annoyed me was they cut a promo later on where they go, Takeshita, I'm going to see you at Revolution. And then they announced a bunch of lead-up matches for that belt. And we're going, well, wait a minute. Nobody's going to beat Takeshita up until he gets to Omega. So what the fuck was the point of even announcing that there would be a lead-up matches where, you know, Takeshita's going to go to a gauntlet? It also takes the power away from Takeshita being your champion, because you're really acknowledging that Omega's the better guy. Instead of making it Takeshita the high guy in that, they went, all right, he's going to have a match with either Orange Cassidy, if I'm not mistaken, at Dynamite, or it was either Orange Cassidy or I'd have to look at the notes again, but...
Hey, man, they're actually planning matches out. They're planning matches out. So
well, we know that
basically, Dynamite this week is a match between Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong. And then the week after, the winner of that match faces Takeshita. And then whoever wins that match faces...
Omega.
Omega, yeah.
Revolution. For the belt. And yeah. You're going, well, wait a minute. Well, we already know it's going to be Takeshita and Omega. So those other matches are kind of pointless.
Well,
that's a what the fuck moment.
But in any event, though, man, like at least they're doing something with it.
Yeah, agreed. Like,
how long have we been sitting here bitching about them not making match announcements for each show? So this is a step in the right direction for them, man, for sure.
Grand Slam was the culmination of writing. Maybe not good writing, not bad writing, but they did plan everything up. They didn't do this a week out before. They set things up. They could have executed some of the reveals a little bit better, like when, you know, Tony Storm reveals, oh, 3 weeks out, I've been playing you all along. That should have been done. Fine. But they did it. And then they rewarded you a bit by doing more vignettes and acting and things around that. And that was good. Like when she dressed up as Mariah May and did a whole Mariah May sequence in ring, I went, okay, then you redeemed yourselves, if not a little bit, by, oh, you were too soon to reveal that you were, you know, really in the know of who you were. No, she did more acting. I liked it. I liked what they did where they had her come out as Mariah May. I liked that they built up to this whole Grand Slam. When they had the baby ring from the high school gym, And your tag guys couldn't stand on the edge because there was no edge for them to stand on. Did it really matter as much? Because that first match with Will Ospreay, he was flying around so much in the ring. Mm-hmm. But I asked myself, what is it with Kenny Omega? Is he really that hurt following? And he tried to do a move on Takeshita and botched it and almost hurt himself real bad. As I was watching the match, I said, whoa, there's nothing wrong with this guy. Why are we saying that he's not wrestling at full? Oh, shit. He couldn't get Takeshita over. And that was scary. That move against Takeshita, that could have been an injury, bad injury.
Yeah, well, that's something that, you know, he's going to be dealing with from now on. I mean,
exactly.
The guy's he's not a young guy anymore.
And he tried to do the poison rana and it did not hit. And then they had to explain it away.
And another thing that really pissed me off again this week is, on Dynamite, you had Adam Cole and those idiots go against the Death Riders. And it was just like, oh my God. Talk about shit matches of the week. Thank you for putting that in there, because it did nothing to elevate anyone for Collision or anything. And, you know, so speaking of elevating, does Chris Jericho hold talent back? Chris Jericho addressed claims that he has held back talent in wrestling, challenging critics to provide an example. He firmly stated, name one person that got dragged down from working with me. Jericho acknowledged that while some wrestlers might not have had advanced further after working with him, that was beyond his control. Maybe afterwards they didn't go higher, but that's not up to me. I'm not in charge of booking the entire company. Emphasizing his role in helping talent grow, Jericho pointed to wrestlers who have benefited from working with him. Big Bill and Brian Keith have grown by leaps and bounds from working here with me. He reaffirmed his commitment to elevating others rather than hiding them. I definitely know what my intentions are, and it's not to bury anybody. It's to build as many people as I can. I've always loved the concept of the Jericho Vortex and how anybody that works with me gets dragged down. Name one person that got dragged down from working with me. Everybody that I can think of who worked with me certainly went to a higher level. I did a year with MJF and look where he's at. Danny Garcia, Sammy Guevara, Daddy Magic last week comes off commentary and gets a big pop. Who do you think put him in that position? Now, this is all from Insight with Chris Van Fleet. I love that last sentence of Daddy Magic, who has gotten himself over on commentary. And Jericho, who do you think put him there? That was great.
He should not have been in that position. He should have been a tag champion by now or some mid-carder, but he's ruined Proud and Powerful. They were one of the hottest tag teams as LAX coming in, and they join his crew, Inner Circle, and nothing. Did they even get a title? A title shot as tag champs? They did nothing. They had some of the best matches with the Lucha Brothers in TNA. They did it once in AEW, and not even to the same level as some TNA fucking Sam's Town level show. That was a disaster. Jake Hager, disaster.
Sammy Guevara. Right there, yeah.
Relegated to ROH as of right now.
And that guy, he's been mid-card. He's gotten the TBS belt, the many times.
Fair question. Sammy Guevara, if he gets released tomorrow, signs with NXT, same type of reaction Ricky Starks had, right?
More than likely, and he honestly, Triple H and Shawn would do whatever they could to get the guy over and put him in as prominent of a situation as possible. We look and we see everybody who's gone back to WWE or gone to WWE that either worked in AEW or in Stephanie Vaquer's, in her example, working in an AEW adjacent show. They've capitalized on absolutely everything that they possibly could from any of these people that defected. And it's insane.
Would he end up at NXT or would he go to TNA?
He'd probably go to NXT.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think doesn't he live in Florida too? So that would just be convenient. There you go. All right. So that's the Jericho Vortex. This week, Eric Bischoff said AEW is a dead end for wrestlers' careers. Eric Bischoff harshly criticized AEW, claiming it has become a dead end for wrestlers' careers. When asked to name three AEW stars who might be in a better position by the end of the year, he bluntly responded, "None of them. That promotion is circling the toilet bowl." He attributed AEW's struggles to poor leadership, lack of creative structure, and an absence of vision, arguing, "There's not a chance any of those talents is going to be any more valuable as an asset 12 months from now than they are today or that they were 12 months ago." Bischoff went even further, declaring, "It's the place where your career goes to die. There's no exceptions to the rule. If you have one, I'd like to hear it, but I don't think you do." He listed stars like Mercedes Mome, Adam Copeland, and Christian as examples of talent who arrived in AEW with momentum but have since stalled. He also dismissed Will Ospreay's impact, saying the supposed best in the world, Will Ospreay, is a bust. He doesn't draw money. He argued that AEW caters too much to a niche audience that enjoys flashy wrestling moves, stating, "If you're one of the small percentage of audience that just loves wrestling moves for the sake of wrestling moves, because it looks kind of like the video game you play, you're happy as hell. The problem is there's not enough of them to build a business around." Bischoff criticized AEW's direction, claiming it alienates a larger audience and devalues its stars. He pointed to MJF as an example of mismanagement, saying, look what's happening to MJF, for crying out loud. That was almost too hard to screw up, flat as can be. He also took aim at John Moxley's current run, stating, John Moxley, are you kidding me? Death Riders, whatever that is, it ain't working. The only thing the death riding is the audience away from the product. His comments painted a grim picture of AEW's future, arguing that no talent in the company is currently increasing the value and its creative approach is actively pushing fans away. He's got a program, right? So we know that part of this is entertainment value. B, though, is, again, when someone who firsthand has been part of the problem, right? This guy has had his own ego, his own issues, and, you know, destroyed, you know, things that were either promising or, you know, never got him to the, in TNA's case, to the level that they thought they were going to get it to. What's interesting about it is that he makes some valid points and some are over the top. The question is, you know, again, MJF, realistically, that feud with Adam Cole made, like, it was like watching the Ice Bucket Challenge, right? You know, it was just pouring a fucking cold bucket of water over one of the hottest guys you had. So, and then Ospreay, again, like I said, perfect opener, like you said, Steve, to get the crowd hot. But where does this guy go then? Because this guy should be someone that you're focusing on, not on fucking choking out fucking Adam Copeland when Adam's 50 fucking two and Moxley is like 42. I mean, it's like your future's right there. These are the guys you need to build.
Yep. And you know, the thing is, I think that we're going to start to see the ascent of Ospreay in, you know, going into that world title picture. I've said for quite some time now that All In Texas needs to end with Will Ospreay holding the AEW World Championship over his head. And I think that we're going to start to see how he's going to distance himself from Kyle Fletcher after he picks up the win in this steel cage match at Revolution. And we're going to start to see him go after the Death Riders as well. So it's going to be very interesting, but yeah, you know, July's right around the corner. So they got to make some headway to get this guy built up so that he's a credible challenger.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as Bischoff goes, dude, the guy is so, obviously he speaks so much hyperbole. I don't even listen to what he says half the time when he's
like Jim Cornette. He's a very jaded guy. These are guys who were not at the top of where they were. They used to hold court in their respective promotions and they're not there anymore. So all they can do is run their mouth.
The problem in calling them just jaded guys is that you discredit the fact that they have experience and knowledge.
Oh, they do.
So,
and that's, I would not be running my mouth. I would go, hey, Tony, hire me. I would go,
Bischoff tried to do that. Bischoff tried to do that, and Tony wouldn't give him a job. So right. That's realistically more than likely why Bischoff is so butthurt. He's like a jilted lover that, you know, he loved AEW, but AEW didn't love him back. And I think that, you know, the guy speaks in so much hyperbole that it's got a diminishing return at this point. He can't deal with the fact that AEW is the second most profitable wrestling company in the history of the world behind WWE, and it's not WCW anymore. He can't grasp that fact.
I don't think that. I mean, let's face it. WCW, in different age, different time, right? If you take their success then and bring it into modern day figures, AEW can't fucking hold a torch. AEW can barely hold a torch to what TNA was doing at TNA's peak. All right. But he's got a point about the niche audience.
Mm-hmm.
We've all said
this. Yeah, absolutely, right. He does.
And that's the thing that's fascinating, that Tony still cannot grasp the concept of how to big to make it bigger, to build it bigger, because you have the resources. And I think that's the most frustrating thing.
But I want to say this, though, and viewing Grand Slam, they did fill seats. It wasn't one of these things where the camera had to pan down and stay down the whole time because the upper decks were empty.
The upper deck was empty.
But
they didn't shoot the upper deck smartly enough. The only time you saw it was empty was when Jon Moxley decided to go into the crowd and they had to do a wider shot, and that's when you could see it. The thing is, the actual place looked good on camera. Mm-hmm. And then you have jackasses going into business for themselves, and then you reveal shit that it's like, okay, the honest answer is that's great. That's wonderful. But it's also Australia, where they're not there all the time. They're here all the time.
And they need to get those results here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I do have to say as well, and I know you hate the guy, Michaels, but the moment that happened with Copeland and having the crowd sing his song a cappella was pretty fucking great.
You could tell
that even Copeland was touched by it. He was fighting back tears, bro. It was a really cool sight to see. Regardless of your allegiances, put tribalism aside. It was a really cool visual.
This reminds me of when I used to wrestle at all.
No, here's the thing. It has nothing to do with Copeland. It has everything to do with the fucking fact that I just hate fans singing these fucking theme songs.
I got period. You.
I don't care which one. I fucking hate that.
It's supposed to be another octave higher, but then they just keep doing it flat. So then they got an opera guy to show that it's supposed to be one octave higher for the second verse, and the people just didn't bother, so still do it the other way. Oh, the big fat tub waving his arms in the air. And nobody gave a shit. That was the best. And they still sing it all fucked up. And what is the guy supposed to be? He's a revolutionary, but he dresses up like something out of a Clockwork Orange.
That's fucking awesome. What can you say? I just still hate the fans singing with that. Revolution next month at Staples Center is selling good with 3 weeks to go. It sold over 7,000 tickets, according to WrestleTix, which it should. Yeah. That's the thing. It should, especially in LA. LA is the kind of market that you should be selling that. Speaking of getting bigger, TNA just announced that Unbreakable will be here in Las Vegas on April 17th at the Cox Pavilion.
What the hell is that?
Oh, come it's on, Rob. You know where all the Cox are in town.
Oh, the Thomas and Mack Arena. Oh, that's that's actually bigger than what they would have done when they were doing the Orleans.
It's
7,000 seats, 9,000 seats more than the Orleans. So that's impressive.
Yeah, and honestly, most likely, you know, it will be tailored to, you know, a smaller. So again, making it look great on TV. Yep. That's the whole thing. But also could be something that leads to NXT involvement, because we saw Santino and Ava talking. So that might up your sales and make it a bigger venue. However, backstage bloodbath at TNA as Anthony Ciccone. There you go. Christy Hemme and Josh Matthews have all left TNA. There were a number of changes behind the scenes with TNA Wrestling today. PW Insider was told that Anthony was the president of the company, has exited the position. No word yet who will replace him at the role. He entered the role in February 2024. At the time, he was the president of TNA's parent company, Anthem Entertainment Group. Met him. He's a very good guy as well. So it was kind of surprising. PW Insider has also been told that a new executive has been brought on to oversee production and other facets of the company. And as part of the change, both Josh Matthews and Christy Hemme have also departed their roles with TNA. So the question becomes, is this more growth for TNA You know, is it showing a closer possibly involvement with WWE? You know, it's very interesting that this timing happened the same time.
You were always talking about how these are separate entities and the none of this is going to happen. They're over there and they interact.
Exactly. But as it deepens with the possibility of TKO being involved, you know, then things start changing. That's the whole thing. They were.
Did somebody say TK?
Oh, TKO.
Oh.
Oh.
But, you know, obviously we're seeing a lot more of the interaction between both. The question is, you know, as being floated, will WWE eventually take them over? And now that, I mean, now that you had the head of Anthem leave the company, and it sounded like he's left Anthem as well. So if that's true, then see, that's where things start changing. Mm-hmm. Again, with corporations owning the stuff, totally different than if it's just a person. So
being a part of several reorgs, everything starting to come together with it. So that's going to happen.
So are we happy about this or too soon to say?
Well, look so far what they're doing.
Yeah.
The company's been on an upswing, you know, since they replaced Scott. Not that that has anything to do with Scott. It's just, I think that they've opened up more corporate opportunities, whereas it was being run as a wrestling company before. Now it's theoretically being run more so towards an entertainment company.
Now, I knew about Josh Matthews behind the scene. I didn't even know that Christy Hemme was still functioning in the company until just now.
Well, that's good because she was, and she took her ball and went home.
To what capacity was she working in TNA?
Fluffer. Before you walk through the curtains.
Damn, yeah. I think I'm gonna go back to wrestling school. She's gotta be working at a local freaking indie place now. I mean,
I thought you were going to become a fluffer. Because you'd be kind of good at that, Rob. That's right. You just Gilbert Gottfried all over that thing.
Wig, get away. How many fluffers does it take to bite the dick off a pro wrestler?
Oh, boy. Okay, so there was a Super Bowl that just happened last Sunday. Vince McMahon. Yeah. Vince McMahon's father, Shane, was there.
Why does Shane have better seats?
But Tony Khan is you know, 90,000 feet away from the field while the McMahons are on the field. So
was that like Sean Devine? I think his name is
Adam Devine.
Yeah. Adam Devine. Yeah.
And the Undertaker there with a cocktail in hand. Well, the Undertaker addressed. He told Bully Ray on the latest Busted Open Radio that he was at this past Sunday Super Bowl as Vince McMahon's guest and spoke about his relationship with the former WWE owner. I was a guest. Yeah, look, I'm going to get hate for that. People are like, oh, you guys were so close. You knew what happened. I'm like, I don't know what hasn't been done. We don't talk about those things. But he is a friend of mine. First off, he gave me an opportunity to make something of my life and become something. Through the course of all those years, we became friends. After my father passed away, he was a father figure. He was a brother. He was a mentor. I don't know how, I don't know everything that's happened, what's going on, and I'm not the judge on this case. There's only one judge. That's the man upstairs. He's going to give us all whatever we deserve in the end, and that's what it is. I think people in a glass houses shouldn't throw stones. I don't have to agree with everything that people do. But it doesn't change the fact that I love somebody and I'm friends with somebody. You know, naturally, you show up anywhere with Vince McMahon. Although I think now that the mustache is gone, he looks a little less like an evil, you know, saboteur. So, but, you know, I mean, this is the difference now. We've got Taker walking around the Super Bowl in a Mardi Gras hat and a fucking cocktail instead of a fucking duster and fucking Undertaker hat. So, you know.
Because he's Mark Calloway now.
That's right.
And he gets, and he's earned the right to be that. And
yes,
I don't think that he should be responsible for Vince McMahon by proxy. If the guy's saying to you, this guy gave me a life, and anyone who's a remote wrestling fan would have to acknowledge in some way, oh shit, what would this guy have been with? What would his life be like without being the Undertaker? He's only ever been on WWE. He stayed loyal to the company. And if the guy gives him a shot to go to the Super Bowl, and they're seen holding hands and having a bro moment, well, fuck it, you know? That's like the Cosby Show. Do you think the rest of that cast wants to be acknowledged with that guy? But when the opportunity came, they said, hey, they patted him on the back and they said, we don't know what the hell happened. We're not responsible for that. So fuck it. You know, I'm giving him a royal goddamn pass.
He did someone say Vanessa? Come here, Rudy.
No, what you got to do is you talk about the pudding pops, and then you put the pudding pops in the kid, and you take a photo with the Kodak film.
So basically, Rob, you just are basically, hey, you know what? If they're fucking horrible sexual
predators, no. I'm separating Mark Calloway from Vince McMahon. I'm separating it from him. I just fucking, if the guy says this is the experience I had with him, I'm not going to say you're an asshole. I don't know. Now, if it was somebody like, you know, Brock Lesnar, that's a different conversation. If Brock Lesnar's like, you know, you should give him a pass, I'm going to be like, fuck you. You know, you have a daughter, you know, give me a fucking check to be a vegetable for the next 1,000 years when you kick my ass, 'cause I'm calling you out on it. A lot of you guys were involved, and that's a different conversation, but this guy seems squeaky clean, and I would like to imagine that he is squeaky clean. I'd like to imagine somewhere out there that he's just banging the shit out of Michelle McCool, and that's fine. You know, same with Stone Cold. You know, I heard The Rock's name brought up Merkley in a few conversations here and there. I'd like to imagine, and he's squeaky clean too, Dwayne Johnson. And that's the thing. How far does this go before you wipe out the entire locker room of everyone in the Attitude Era and you go, I can't finally look back on any of you.
That's that good old cancel culture, bro.
And that's right. And that's the thing. Whereas Vince McMahon is still actively doing this, even in his interviews, they go, what would you be doing if you're not in WWE? I'd imagine myself a woman doing some things. And you're like, okay, well, you're a piece of shit now. But then again, I've seen some sketchy pornos and went, I got to go to church now, you know, but this guy's actively doing that now. Yeah. Whereas a lot of these other guys either were A, I got roped into something and I wish I hadn't done it, or B, that guy really is a piece of shit and would follow Vince off the bridge. This guy's just like, hey, this guy treated me well. I'm happy for you. Have a bromance with this 80-year-old rapist.
Well, and so just really quick, I just have to clarify something that American Bam Bam put in there in the Twitch chat. He says, hold on, cancel culture doesn't apply to rapists. Absolutely. But the point that I was making is that those same people that are attempting to lump Undertaker in with Vince McMahon, and the point was also being made about The Rock and Stone Cold, you know, do we lump them in as well, or does that not apply? So I think that, you know, it can be a slippery slope, but yeah, I completely agree. Wow, Vince McMahon is a piece of shit, and I completely agree with that. But yeah,
you get her crawling around in the bucket of shit, and yeah, having her strip and all that shit.
Exactly.
Because every time I look at her, I go, oh my god, yeah, oh yeah, she's a women's legend. She was, but what did they? What was the storyline for a lot of these women? Unfortunately, that was my the greatest thing back then was when what's her name breaks her back from doing too many Lita Camaradas or Lita, and they gave her a titty job, and then I was gonna say, and they bang her in the middle of the ring, and I was like, ah, Jesus Christ, no, don't do that to her. She wrestled dudes. China wrestled guys. Yeah. They stood toe to toe with men and they sold. I didn't believe that they could not do these moves. And then she had the titties and she got, you know, banged in the middle of a ring on a SmackDown by Edge. And that was the time.
But and, they were actually banging in real life. So
no, I know that. But my thing was, I didn't want to see them like that. I wanted to imagine that these were leaders in their positions, that these were leaders that they were getting out from just being TNA. No pun intended.
You didn't want to see Lita where the towels, the sheet slipped and you saw her big old.
No, I was actually annoyed. I'll be honest with you. I was annoyed back then because I was like, I just wanted to see her wrestle dudes and do Hurricane Ronas with the Hardys. I didn't want to see her have to sell out like that. And there were so many other women back then doing that. When she came out with the breast implants, I was like, ah, this is bad. They're going to do her dirty. And they did. And that's what happened to a lot of them. Think about it. I always use China as an example. How great was China as a real women's pioneer in wrestling? And then they give her that women's belt, and I'm like, oh, this isn't gonna last. They're gonna fucking bounce her ass out of here. So I look at all the things with Vince McMahon, and I'm like, all right, if we have one guy from that era that I can look at with respect and have a squeaky clean image of him, and it's The Undertaker. Give me one guy left in that roster where I don't have to worry about who the fuck this guy has an NDA with. You know, Chad, how many non-disclosures
Gable.
Are there?
Chad fucking Gable. There is no one squeakier clean than that dude.
Yeah. You.
All right. All right, Sin City Steve, your AEW over under pick of the week.
All right, so you know we've torn into AEW ad nauseum for their lack of booking foresight, shall we say? But keep in mind, Wednesday is the 19th of February. They have a pay per view on the 9th of March, so they're looking 3 weeks out. As of right now, they have three matches set for this show. This coming from a company that generally has 12 to 15 matches, including the pre-show. So obviously, they need to start booking some of these matches. So I think that we're going to see, unfortunately, them returning to form with some breakneck pace this week on Dynamite. We're probably going to see putting the over under at 2.5 additional matches being signed for AEW Revolution on March 9th. And those are all likely going to be coming out of nowhere because why? They've already announced the world title match. They've already announced the steel cage match and they've already announced the international championship match. What else really do they have going right now? Think about it. They don't have a whole hell of a lot going. So yeah, they're going to have to just throw shit at the wall, see what sticks. And I think we're going to see a return to form of Crash TV with Dynamite this week, unfortunately. And 2.5 over or under for matches signed for Revolution this week on Dynamite.
All right, this week's presidential pontification from the president himself.
You know, it's so funny. I said last week I was the smartest guy in the room, and I called it. I said the only way that you could make stupid Charlotte Flair interesting is if Andrade puts some Tyheen on the penis and bangs her rotten. Then she divorces him, steals his suit, and makes her SmackDown debut walking through the halls dressed up as Andrade with a pinstripe suit. She did everything but put on the Mexican jockstrap that he wears when he walks down the ramp. This was so sad.
Nobody wants to bang her, and now she wants to be one of the trans. This is what happens when you get a DEI hire in SmackDown, okay? They said, we can't get the real Ric Flair. We're going to do a diversity hire, and we're going to get Charlotte Flair. So sad. She doesn't even know how to do the woo. I said, and I called this, and by the way, I want to give a special, what do they call it? A shout out to Rob Bosslery for calling it that she is the most boring champion, okay? I've never seen a more boring leader than little Joe Biden, okay? She puts me to sleep in the ring every time. And also how sad it is that Roxanne, soon to be deported, Raquel Rodriguez, Roxanne, I don't know, something Mexican-y, had to beat up Jade Cargill, my Nubian queen. We were looking into making her the next Mrs. Trump, okay? Because I said, you know what? Melania gave me a 6'4" kid, but I want a 7-foot-tall black kid. You know, we need a black kid because I want to appeal to the NBA AACP, okay? I want a tall, beautiful Nubian king to be the next commander-in-chief. And now because of one Raquel Rodriguez. Okay, that's probably not even her real name. Her name is probably Maria Mendoza. Okay, probably Maria Mendoza. They beat up my beautiful Jade Cargill. And then we had that New Jersey trash. Okay, what was it? The Liv Morgan Revenge Tour. Okay, her real name is Roberta Caglioni, and she's from the South Shore of New Jersey. She's human trash. She's garbage. She's trash. She is a bleach blonde. She's part of the Biden lamestream media movement. That's why they gave her, she's another DEI hire, and they gave her the belt for 3 weeks just to shut her up. But they took it off that immigrant. They took it off that filthy Irish immigrant whose name we will not speak. We don't even, what is it? Rebecca Quinn Logan McAfee, McBeer, they took it off of her, Mrs. Potato Famine, and they gave it to this New Jersey trash, and she's such an embarrassment, and now we've got it on another immigrant. You know, they put it on these immigrants, and then we have one American champion, and she's barring. How do we have one American champion and Charlotte Flair, whose real name is Ricardo Flair? So sad. So very sad, Ricard. She can't even do the woo, okay? I would have to fuck her 10 times and you still wouldn't get a woo out of her. It's so tragic what they've done to her and what they've done to the women's belt. Gone are the days of Stratisfaction, where she used to come out in a miniskirt and then there would be a halftime show during WrestleMania where Vince McMahon would fuck her in the middle of the ring and then dump her head in a bucket of shit. Okay, just to keep her in place, okay? That was what a real women's champion should look like, okay? And then he would have her drag her filthy wife around, although we like her now. Linda McMahon is doing such a tremendous job dismantling the shame department of pubic education, because that's all they do is teach kindergartners how to fuck, okay? Because of the Department of Education, they were giving condoms to kindergartners. It was a program under horrible Joe Biden. It was called Condoms for Kindergartners, okay? We're getting rid of that. Linda McMahon is going to get rid of that in such a tremendous way, and we're going to enroll the Department of Education into the Department of Defense, because we have to defend these children against condoms, okay? We're going to defend these children from condoms and also sleepy time reading from trans people, okay? No more condoms for kindergartners or trans people reading you books, okay? Nana, those days are over. Yeah.
All right, it's time for the bad boys to take a little social media dump. First thing off, Bailey was part of the NBA All-Star Celebrity Game, and in the introductions, again, this is the branding that's amazing with WWE. They actually branded her as a WWE legend. So That's wow. It's just crazy how they can get stuff out there like that. Drew McIntyre was seen signing a CM Punk autographed pop figure, and if you look closely, "fuck CM Punk cunt" is what he wrote on the pop figure. This sex offender was arrested after avoiding police for 37 years, which was really impressive until I looked closer and realized that's actually Sting sitting with Lex Luger and Great Muta. Crazy. Hey, it was Valentine's Day. My heart is literally hanging from the rafters. Be mine, from Gorilla Monsoon. Here we have Kenny Omega, be my one winged angel. And of course, R-Truth, thinking of you on Flag Day. Logan Paul, doing what at WrestleMania? WrestleCourt. Logan Paul is either fucking Cena or Punk at WrestleMania 41, right?
What?
Speaking of, look at that. Hello, Mariah May. Not to be outdone, look at Mandy and her Super Bowl spirit there. Ringside News has yet another employee going rogue before departure. The truth always comes out. Apparently someone on Ringside News, as they were leaving, responded to Britt Baker and said, if you just tell everyone you fucked Christian, we can all move on. Not a big deal at Britt Baker.
Oh, shit.
How about that, huh? Shots fired. Oh, speaking of shots fired, look at the Rock and Roll Express without any shirts on bareback on horses there, huh? Can't go wrong with the Rock and Roll Express, apparently. Here we got Copeland in that crazy Australian crowd, and on Facebook, AI asked the question, why was Adam Copeland there? Very fitting. I still ask myself that every fucking day. MJF, his brother, my mentor, a guy who helped shape me early on in my career. Your old boss brainwashed you into believing we need to treat the fans like morons and pretend other wrestling companies don't exist. You dumb, ignorant, bald, grifting fuck. Respectfully, Maxwell Jacob Friedman. And that's responding to Jimmy Cordonis, who said, great job, MJF, of reminding your audience about the man who is on top in the other company. MJF also made headlines by saying Dustin Rhodes is the man that took 37 long, hard years just to get out from underneath his daddy's shadow. After all that hard work and sacrifice, now you live in the shadow of your little baby brother. So good for him and getting that out there. Very interesting picture here of Dusty Rhodes, Tony Schiavone, and Bobby the Brain Heenan. From Road Wild, the WCW Road Wild pay-per-views, originally Hog Wild, took place at Sturgis Motorcycle Rally in Sturgis, South Dakota. Bobby Heenan described his experience at Sturgis. Quote, the pay-per-views in Sturgis were risky. The bikers showed up at noon, but the event didn't start till 7. They spent the whole day drinking under the hot sun. There was no proper flooring, just gravel, giving them plenty to throw. I called the action alongside Tony Schiavone and Dusty Rhodes. As I walked out to the announcer's table, the crowd cheered, so I waved to them. Dusty nudged me and asked, I thought you were a heel. Not when they're holding rocks and we're stuck here. We waved to them. which is very apropos. This from Kane. Kane, quote, I never liked Christian Cage. One time I saw him at the airport and he was like, have you had anything to eat? I'm like, yeah, I just had a burrito. And he punched me in the stomach and ran away. That is Christian. Anytime I had the opportunity to choke slam Christian, I took advantage of it. And here we see a picture of the most hated man in WWE history and Vince McMahon. For those of you who can't see, it's a picture of little Dominic Mysterio on the lap of Vince McMahon. We'll get here to a quick...
they made Dominic Mysterio's little ass great again.
Well, here we got a little video here. And that video is of Chris Bay taking steps here. It's been a few months for Chris coming back from this injury. When you are essentially in full paralysis. And
do we have Do we have the link for his T-shirt again? Because I bought his T-shirt today, and I want other people to still be able to, you know, donate and do something.
Yeah, you can. You just go to TNA's website, look up Chris Bay, or go to should be on Pro Wrestling Tees, and yep. It's the We Love Bay shirt, and you can get that. The proceeds go to Chris directly. Also on Sunday, March 23rd, we have a show at the Silverton Casino here in Las Vegas. It's a benefit show for Chris, which will include Swerve Strickland, Rhino, John Morrison, just confirmed, just a ton of people who are going to be here, Ace Austin, Trey Miguel, quite possibly just waiting on some crossings of the X's and the Y's and the dotting of the I's and all that stuff on a contract for a certain someone who would be making a homecoming here for this show and was really kind of the driving force behind getting this together, suggestion that it was done by Joe DeFalco and FSW. So hopefully when we can officially say that he's signed on, then we can get that out there. So, but it's incredible to see Chris like that. Just walking is amazing. All right, finally here, the last thing to talk about before we go, it's the 118th Annual Wrestling Observer Awards. Wow, what an exciting week. Let's start looking at this list. Wrestler of the Year, Cody Rhodes. Any objections?
No.
Okay. Most Outstanding, Will Ospreay. Can we question what the difference between Outstanding and Wrestler of the Year is? Anyone?
Most Outstanding typically refers to match quality. So
I would agree with that. Agree with that.
Okay.
Makes sense to me.
Tag Team of the Year, the Young Bucks. Does anyone want to wonder why Dave Meltzer said the Young Bucks, or is it?
So keep in mind, this isn't Meltzer. This is the readers of the Observer.
Okay. So it's Meltzer.
I would not say the Young Bucks this year, maybe a year or two ago, but not. Yeah.
Not this year.
It's 2024, and they were out almost half the year.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. No. There weren't standout tag teams, but Jesus.
Best on interviews, Drew McIntyre.
I could see that, man. He really stepped into his own, especially with this feud with CM Punk. If you think about it, during the entire time that Punk was off TV and injured. Drew McIntyre was keeping that feud going, and he kept it hot.
But agreed. can you argue at the same sense that maybe Punk was the driving force in interviews this year? Because, you know,
you yourself said that McIntyre is better than he's ever been.
Oh, yeah. I'm not disagreeing, and I don't like Drew that much as a wrestler. But I also hate Punk, and I'm like, oh, I own a Punk shirt now? What the fuck happened? So,
of course you do.
Promotion of the Year, WWE. Best Weekly TV Show, AEW Dynamite.
Yep.
Okay. Match of the Year, Bryan Danielson versus Will Ospreay.
Okay.
I can see that. Yep.
Okay. Absolutely.
And this is the same guy who just said Drew McIntyre best interview, and Punk and McIntyre had a Hell in a Cell that was fucking phenomenal. So, okay.
Well, now keep in mind, this is when they say match of the year, that is strictly the match itself, not the lead up to the match, not building on the cinema of it. It's bell to bell, the match. But without a doubt, Punk and McIntyre deserve some recognition for that match. But Danielson and Ospreay was on another level.
10 out of 10.
United States, Canada MVP, Cody Rhodes. Yep. Kuchi Yasuzawa or Japanese MVP, Zack Sabre Jr. Mexico MVP. Mexico MVP, Mystico, European MVP, Michael Oku. This one, though, the Hodge Award non-heavyweight MVP, Darby fucking Allin?
Non-heavyweight MVP, not this year.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Not MVP this year. Was more of an MVP than Darby Allin.
Not this year.
Yeah.
Wrestling, women's wrestling MVP, Siri.
I don't watch enough Stardom.
Wait. Where I who?
It's on screen, Rob.
I know. I'm seeing this. Who?
Yeah. She's Japanese. She's in Stardom. Apparently, the viewers, the voters of this, don't watch wrestling.
She used to be in NXT, so.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Evidently, she stepped through that portal one too many times and found herself back in Japan.
Okay. I guess so. All right. Best box office draw, Cody Rhodes.
Yep.
I guess. Feud of the year, CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre, even though they didn't have a match of the year.
There you go.
Most improved, Kyle Fletcher.
Yep.
All right.
All right. Sure. Most charismatic, The Rock, who, was...
He cut great promos this year. He did some great stuff. The Mama Rhodes stuff.
That goes back to WrestleMania. The Bryan Danielson Award for Best Technical Wrestler is Zack Sabre Jr.
Why not just give it to Bryan Danielson?
I don't understand how you can win an award but be named an award at the same. I don't know.
So they, for whatever reason, they love to name the awards after, you know, individual wrestlers,
somebody's retired.
PSJ has been on fire and just recently lost the IWGP World Championship to Hirooki Goto, of all people, in New Japan. So, yeah, Zach's been on a huge tear.
Okay.
Bruiser Brody Memorial Award, Best Brawler, Hangman fucking Page. Go fuck yourself. Fuck you all who fucking allegedly voted for this shit. Hangman fucking Page. Go fuck yourselves. I'm not even going to fucking ask you guys. I'm done with that shit. Fuck this guy. All right. Best flying wrestler, Will Ospreay. Sure. Yep. Most overrated, Nia Jax.
I don't think she's overrated. I don't think she's underrated. I think she's where she needs to be. She's gotten better, man.
I've been an outspoken critic of hers. But she definitely has gotten better.
Right. Overrated would be, I don't know, John Moxley. So most underrated is Take a Shit Up. Rookie of the Year, Javon Evans, who is doing some great work in NXT. Best non-wrestler, Paul Heyman.
Yep.
Best television announcer, Nigel McGuinness.
I love Nigel McGuinness right now.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But worst television announcer, Booker T. Hello, fucking Mil Máscaras over there at AEW fucking sucks bigger dicks than Booker T, whatever.
JR is worse than Booker T, but JR is not on TV every single week. I actually don't have a problem with Booker T being named worst TV announcer. Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Best major wrestling show, AEW Revolution. Worst major wrestling show, Triple Mania Monterey.
Oh God. That show was a shit show.
Okay.
I didn't watch that show, but I only saw clips. And yeah, just from the clips I saw, it deserved to be on that list.
Okay.
Let's see, worst television show. AEW Rampage, obviously it was canceled, so I guess no one can really. Yeah. Let's see. Most disgusting promotional tactic, WWE TKO continued relationship with Saudi Arabia. If the shoe was on the other foot, I wonder if, Meltzer would have anything to say about that and AEW, because I bet you Meltzer's paychecks got bigger. Best wrestling maneuver, Will Ospreay's Hidden Blade. Are we talking about his actual like blade that he cuts himself with?
Yeah, that's Moxley.
Yeah.
Worst worked match of the year, Jimmy Uso versus Jey Uso at WrestleMania 40.
Yeah.
I guess no one saw Moxley wrestle this year. Worst feud of the year, MJF versus Adam Cole.
Agreed.
Sure.
Sure. Worst promotion of the year, NWA, I guess.
Yeah. Are we counting Ring of Honor as something separate? Then I would say Ring of Honor.
Apparently Ring of Honor has been at least tolerable.
And it's part of AEW, so you're not going to say anything negative. Best booker, Paul Levesque, which I'm surprised if this is a fan thing for these guys that they would name him, because you see so much hate towards him. So I don't know. Promoter of the year, Nick Khan. That's the same thing. I'm like, some part of me goes, Meltzer's kissing a little ass here.
I think that something that we have to say is that they, even the hardest of hardcore AEW fans, are recognizing that AEW is not even a pro. So Tony Khan is not a book, or he's not a promoter. He's a matchmaker. He's not even a booker. He's strictly a matchmaker. And these results show it.
So Tony Khan will be starring on Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway pretty soon as the matchmaker, make me a match. Best gimmick, Tony Storm.
Sure.
Worst gimmick, The Learning Tree.
Oh, yeah.
The whole Learning Tree. Best pro wrestling book, The Man, Not Just Your Average Girl by Becky Lynch. And best pro wrestling documentary, Mr. McMahon. There you have it.
I didn't learn anything in that promotion. It was, you know, I didn't feel like I learned anything new watching it. I don't know. That's just my takeaway on that, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, but a lot of people who didn't know any of the story of him learned a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't necessarily made for marks. You know, it was made at a different time too, where it was going to shine a light on Vince, and then everything went backwards. You know, but it makes you remember the good old days. And speaking of Jericho and bringing careers down, Ralphus never went anywhere after working with Jericho. I think this picture proves it. Jericho personal protection guy, personal security, the JPS, poor Ralphus. Chris, you never brought him along, man. And kind of hurts. All right, Rob, what do you got going on coming up, man?
Well, on Sunday will be the second annual Comedy Reviewer Awards, which will be at Wise Guys Comedy Club. Not the one on Main Street, but the newer one that's at Town Square. So go to Town Square.
So you don't have to worry about getting mugged.
Main Street is gentrified out the yin yang. Main Street won't look the same in about 5 years, but that's a whole nother conversation. Main Street is about as, it's more whitewashed than anything going on behind scenes at WWE.
I don't know about WWE.
Well,
anything else, or just that? That's the big one.
That's the big one right now.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Oh,
I do remember now. I should be tomorrow at the 10 o'clock show, at LA Comedy Club at the Stratosphere.
Nice.
Oh,
awesome.
I forgot about that one. I think I'm making a guest spot on that one.
Interesting.
Oh yeah, we'll just say yeah.
All right, Steve, what about you? What do you got to say?
All right, thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, doing all the stuff that you guys do. We appreciate each and every one of you. Also, very special thank you to all the brave men and women serving this country, whether you're doing it on lands foreign or domestic. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can do what we love to do. And last but not least, repsports.com, REPPsports.com. Go there for all your pre-workout, weight loss, general energy needs. Repsports.com. Use promo code Vegas at checkout and save yourself 15%.
There you go. All right. Well, that's what's going on this week in pro wrestling. And, we got, lots going on still. Chasing WrestleMania here. The Chamber's coming up in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, essentially, to AEW's pay-per-view. So a lot of stuff.
I got a lotion for locking a woman in a chamber. What's so sad?
I'm sorry, Mr. President. I don't know what to say to that.
We had to fill out it. You know what an NDA stands for, right? We had to fill out an NDA. NDA stands for not Donald's account. So sad. So sad.
Oh, boy.
Boys and girls, a lesson from your president. Get the contract and the agreement on the front end and make sure in the fine print it says no holds barred. Okay? This is a wrestling show. You know what no holds barred means, okay?
Yeah, Zeus and Rip. So, gotta love Zeus and Rip. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in this week and hanging out with us. Everyone taking part in the chat. Really appreciate everything. We hope you have a wonderful week to come. And until next time, everyone.
With that, everybody, thank you for hanging out. We will we'll do it all again next week. Till then, happy wrestling.
Rolling up the strip under neon lights. Podcast mics glowing in the desert night. Matt and Michael's leading with the swagger tight. Sin City Steve right by his side. All right. Rob Buccellari dropping truths, no fear. Broadcasting stories, make it loud and clear. From the Fremont edges to the Bellagio sphere. These bad boys rule, let me make that clear. Vegas bad boys tearing up the scene.
To Matt Michaels and the Vegas Boys of Podcasting, this is John Cena saying thank you so much.